KSVP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201PA, 88.1 FM.
This is Exponential Radio from WXPN.
KOLD, 91.9 FM
from the University of Pennsylvania.
KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bowles, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A former residential school in British Columbia has been designated a National Historic Site. It's the former Kamloops Indian Residential School, where in 2021, a radar survey found roughly 200 potential unmarked graves. More from Dan Carpenter.
National Historic Sites in Canada are places that have shaped the country's history. Not all of it good. That's the case with the former Kamloops Indian Residential School. It was nominated to become a site by the Kamloops Secwepemc First Nation. The Canadian government worked with the band to help determine its significance. The First Nations chief, Razan Casimir, says designating the school a historic site symbolizes hope and the vision of ancestors for a prosperous future for their children and those not yet born. Many of the buildings on the site have been preserved and are being used for education, language, and culture. Celia Haig Brown is a senior scholar at Toronto's York University.
Recognizing the school is a much more complex recognition of Canada's history and its relationship with Indigenous people. I just hope that declaring it a heritage site means that it will be protected in memoriam, so that we do not lose sight of the checkered past we have.
The school operated from 1890 to 1969. The government took over administration of the school from the Catholic Church. It was then run as a day school until it closed in 1978. It was one of the many residential schools across Canada which more than 150,000 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children were forced to attend. It's estimated that about 4,100 children died at the schools. Many of those who attended never returned home. For National Native News, I'm Dan Carpenter.
An estimated 40,000 children in Mexico were raised by grandparents or a relative in 2024, according to that state's Aging and Long-Term Services Department. A bill from the New Mexico legislature was designed to be a pilot program to assist these kinship caregivers. Reporter Jeanette Videos has more.
House Bill 252 has already passed the House and is currently at the Senate Judiciary Committee. The three-year pilot program would assist kinship caregivers in Rio Arriba, Santa Fe, Taos, McKinley, and Doña Ana counties, targeting 50 participants in each area. According to the bill analysis, one-quarter of grandparents raising grandchildren in New Mexico live in poverty. Kinship care is growing here despite declining in the rest of the country, and one of the reasons is parents struggling with substance use disorders. According to the Fiscal Impact Report, the bill originally had a $4.5 million appropriation, but an amended version changed that to $4 million from the general fund. The program would be administered through the Aging and Long-Term Services Department and would provide resources like public assistance, economic support, and legal services. Democratic Representative Michelle Pauline Abeda is a co-sponsor, and she and her husband are kinship caregivers themselves. Abeda is a lawyer, and even she finds the system difficult to navigate.
Sometimes the system is not designed to be one of support, right? And so with this bill, what we're looking at doing is empowering the way that we help families.
Abeda says this bill is to support families who want to obtain legal custody or official guardianship.
Because so many times, the legal fees are what make families concerned about not proceeding through the court system.
The legislative session ends on March 22nd at noon. For National Native News, I'm Jeanette Didius.
And on this day in 1806, the Lewis and Clark expedition were near what would become known as the Oregon Coast. They lost a canoe and sent an interpreter to buy two from the Clatsops. They also described fish later identified as the sockeye salmon and steelhead trout, which was new to science at that time. And they also mentioned Indians eating starry flounder. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Gold from KLCC Studios in Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
If these cuts happen, I will have to start planning funerals.
Juneau residents protest against potential cuts to Medicaid. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 13th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reckons with hundreds of layoffs.
Going over the data that they had collected while they were out on contract, and I got that firing email in the middle of that debriefing interview.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. We have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneinpain.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Alaska's fired federal workers are beginning to file unemployment claims following the Trump administration's move to reduce the federal workforce. Paloma Harbor with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development says as of yesterday, 138 federal workers filed claims. Some workers fired en masse last month got dismissal emails alleging poor job performance, no evidence cited. Harbor testified to a state house committee that such letters by themselves are not grounds to disqualify a claim.
If an employer says that an employee was discharged due to misconduct, the burden is on them to prove it to us. So they have to provide us actual documentation.
Harbor says true misconduct, like drinking on the job or stealing office equipment, would reduce a worker's unemployment benefits. But she says, so far, the federal government has described the dismissals as layoffs, with no allegations of misconduct complicating the unemployment claims. Even if it doesn't hurt their claims, federal civil servants say it's stung doubly to be fired and falsely accused of doing a bad job. Charles Warren Hill was, until recently, in charge of maintenance at Lake Clark National Park. He told legislators his dismissal letter came from someone he didn't know in Washington, D.C., who claimed that he had not met performance goals and lacked the necessary experience.
Clearly, they did not reference any of my superiors who would, if given the chance, speak in my favor. Instead, no one in Alaska region has any influence and cannot provide me with any logical explanation. I've received only exceptional to outstanding performance reviews in my more than 20 years of service with Lake Clark. And I deserve at least an explanation.
Despite his long tenure, Hill was considered a probationary employee because he had recently been promoted. Ex-employees like Hill are now in a kind of career purgatory, unsure if they are truly unemployed or not. A judge in California today ruled that the way the Trump administration fired probationary workers last month was illegal. He ordered the administration to offer jobs back to the employees dismissed from six departments, including the Interior Department, which includes the National Park Service. The administration has denounced the ruling and indicated it intends to appeal. So it's been about 2 weeks since the Trump administration cut hundreds of jobs from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, including positions in Alaska. NOAA, which studies everything from oceans to weather, plays a big role in the state's economy. And as the Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports, that could affect the state's second largest economic driver, the fishing industry.
Morgan Saladino was in NOAA's field office in Anchorage when she got the news.
I was in the middle of a debriefing with a scientist. We were going over the data that they had collected while they were out on contract, and I got that firing email in the middle of that debriefing interview, and I had to tell them, you know, to go sit in the other room.
Saladino is one of about 880 NOAA employees around the country who were fired from the organization last month as part of Elon Musk and his so-called Department of Government Efficiency's effort to shrink the federal workforce. Saladino says two of the three employees from her department lost their jobs, and she's concerned about how that could impact Alaska's fishing industry.
Our field office has completely lost the ability to support observers and evaluate their data, right? And evaluating this data for accuracy and compliance and proper procedure is incredibly important because it's used directly in stock management.
The president of the labor union chapter that represents many of the Alaska Fishery Service employees, Nick Tolomeri, says at least 5% of Alaska's staff was fired. But that only includes union members. The real number may be higher. The layoffs targeted probationary staff, mostly employees with under a year in their department. But Tolomeri says that means they may have come from another department or recently entered from the private sector. The majority of them have PhDs and master's degrees.
The Northwest Center lost a woman who was a presidential fellow, top of the line scientist.
He worries the layoffs could disrupt the continuity of service, endangering the future of NOAA's abilities to complete crucial field work.
You have an aging population of survey scientists and stock assessment people and other ecologists. And, you know, the probationary people were all younger, early career scientists who, you know, quite often were bringing new skill sets and a lot of energy to the system, and they're kind of out.
The layoffs align with the vision of Project 2025, a 2023 document outlining a game plan for an incoming conservative president. Trump has distanced himself publicly from the blueprint, but many of his policies align with its recommendations, including cuts to NOAA. Project 2025 called NOAA one of the main drivers of the climate change alarm industry, and it said the agency's mission was harmful to American prosperity. But many within the seafood industry see NOAA as critical to ensuring the industry's financial success. Frank Kelty works as the fisheries consultant for the largest commercial fishing port in the nation, Alaska's Dutch Harbor. He says NOAA's programs are crucial.
How are you going to manage your fisheries with no information?
One example is the Trawl Survey, an annual assessment of marine health. Research vessels spend months traveling across fishing grounds and surveying fish stocks. Fishery managers then use that information to set things like catch limits. Another NOAA employee who was not permitted to speak publicly and asked to remain anonymous says the cuts have come at the worst possible time. The employees said the funding freeze has made it difficult to do things like buy equipment and prepare boats for the surveys. Kelty says the industry has seen what happens if the surveys don't happen, pointing to a major population collapse in the multi-million dollar snow crab fishery.
During the COVID year, we had no survey at all on brown fish and crab, and it was a very difficult situation, especially on crab. And the next thing we know, when they went and did the next year's survey, there was no snow crab. And we didn't have any heads up that we were going to have an issue with the stock. So these surveys are critical.
Morgan Saladino, who lost her job in Anchorage, emphasizes how closely the fishery service and commercial fishing industry are entwined.
I hope that people are starting to realize that, especially in industry that, you know, they like to say that they hate us because we're a regulatory agency and we make their life more difficult. But when it comes down to it, I think we all realize that we depend on each other. We need each other.
NOAA employees said the cuts have not changed immediate plans for the observer programs or the trawl survey, which is expected to begin in May. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
And a quick note, the judge's ruling we mentioned earlier, saying the Trump administration must reinstate thousands of probationary employees, that did not name the Department of Commerce, which oversees NOAA. The status of those fired workers remains in limbo. There have been a lot of protests at the Alaska State Capitol lately. Janet Lopez, a retired teacher in Juneau, says she's been at a lot of them because of big shifts at the federal level.
We're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble.
Dozens of Juneau residents were at it again on Wednesday as Congress considers drastic funding cuts to Medicaid. That's the government-funded health care insurance program for low-income families and people with disabilities. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, the cuts could jeopardize health care coverage for thousands of Alaskans and put rural hospitals at risk of reducing services or closing.
Standing in a crowd of protesters, Tamalivis Solanoa says Medicaid cuts could be devastating for her family.
If these cuts happen, I will have to start planning funerals.
Her mom has stage 4 renal failure, and her dad has Parkinson's disease. She's been taking care of them both since she was in high school. She says Medicaid is a lifeline for her family, and without it,
I will have to start either working more than 2 jobs I already do. I will have to figure out something else. So if I'm not able to provide for them, if there's no other way, then it's going to be the final nail in their coffin.
Congress is considering major funding cuts to Medicaid, the government-funded health care insurance program for low-income residents and people with disabilities. The spending bill comes from Republicans in Congress as a means to finance tax cuts proposed by the Trump administration. At stake is health care coverage for millions of Americans, including children, who rely on the program to get critical care. Joelle Hall, president of the state's largest labor union, says the cuts could have an outsized impact in Alaska.
This is Alaska to the core. We have the most expensive health care in the world. I want to say that again. If America has the most expensive health care in the world, and Alaska has the most expensive health care in America, ergo, Alaska has the most expensive health care in the world.
Alaska has consistently ranked among the top states in the country for having the highest health care costs per person, according to a 2020 study published in a leading health journal. Medicaid covers almost 40% of Alaska residents. It also helps fund tribal health care and is critical to keeping rural hospitals afloat. Cuts to the program could force the state to decide whether to maintain programs and shoulder the additional expense or leave people without coverage. Anchorage Democratic Senator Forrest Dunbar is the chair of the Health and Social Services Committee in the state Senate. He called on Alaska's congressional delegation to stop that from happening.
It's not just a question of economics. It's also a moral question, because they're not doing this so that they can lower the debt. They're not doing this so they can fund other programs. They're doing this to fund a tax cut for billionaires, and that is morally wrong.
U.S. Republican House Representative Nick Begich voted in favor of a spending blueprint last month that would significantly cut down on government spending. President Trump has said the cuts won't affect Medicaid, but budget experts say it's impossible to do such significant cuts without reducing health care coverage. In a speech to the Alaska legislature last month, Begich said he would support adding work requirements to Medicaid. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski has long been a defender of Medicaid and has been talking to Senate leaders about the impacts to Alaska if programs are cut. Last week, Senator Dan Sullivan told the Anchorage Daily News it was too early to comment on what could happen to Medicaid, but he did introduce an amendment to a Senate resolution aimed at improving Medicaid for the most vulnerable populations.
When healthcare is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When healthcare is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Iditarod mushers have their eyes on the finish line as they rest in White Mountain.
I just started stopping, petting everybody, singing for them, cheering for them, and snacking them.
More on that coming up. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Southeast Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will meet to develop federal wildlife proposals and discuss other subsistence-related issues. The public is invited to participate in the meeting March 18th through 20th in Sitka. More information at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Palmer voters will head to the polls in May to decide whether to recall Mayor Steve Carrington. The Mat-Su Sentinel reports proponents of the recall say Carrington should be removed because he overstepped his authority by hiring an outside attorney to draft a separation agreement for then-city manager Stephen Jelly. According to the recall application, the agreement included, quote, legal elements detrimental to the city of Palmer and was drafted without first consulting the city council. Those legal elements included a $75,000 severance payment, a clause prohibiting the city and Jelly from suing each other, and a non-disclosure agreement limiting what Palmer officials can tell Jelly's potential future employers about the circumstances of his departure, according to the application. Jelly resigned after a tumultuous 53-day tenure marked by allegations of labor law violations and rumors of planned cuts to the city's public safety budget. It was his third such exit from a city in less than 2 years, with previous payouts totaling $200,000. Palmer's city clerk says the election will cost the city about $18,000. If Carrington is recalled, the council will appoint a new mayor to serve until the city's next general election in October. Well, with warmer temperatures and less snow than usual, bears are already starting to wake up. Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Jason Harriman says it's not unusual for some bears to leave their dens early.
We don't frequently have a lot of sightings of bears in March. This year, obviously, it's a little warmer temperatures, a lot less snowfall. So when you have that, it's not unusual for bears to get up in the winter when they're normally denning.
But Harriman says that doesn't mean the bears are awake for good. With little food available, some may leave their dens briefly to stretch their legs before returning to sleep. Still, he says people should start securing attractants now, including bird feeders, trash, backyard grills, and livestock feed. He also says that moose may become more defensive as cows begin calving in April and May.
One of the first things that they do as far as being stressed would be to change a behavior. So like if they're laying down, if that animal stands up, if they were resting, if they start eating, that's a pretty good indication that they're changing a behavior and might be showing a little bit of stress.
Harriman says there are several precautions people can take to reduce conflicts with wildlife. He recommends leashing pets, keeping distance between moose and people, and taking down bird feeders early. Storing trash in bear-resistant containers and using electric fencing for livestock can also help keep bears away. For more information and resources for living in bear country, visit the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website. Despite what Anchorage residents might be seeing outside, it's been a particularly snowless winter in Alaska's largest city. Okay, sure, several inches of the white fluffy stuff blanketed the city today, but coming off two very snowy, record-breaking winters, Anchorage's snow cover has been mostly abysmal this year, much to the chagrin of outdoor sports enthusiasts and snow removal companies alike. National Weather Service climate researcher Brian Bretschneider is back for our Ask a Climatologist segment. He says, at least in Anchorage, this winter set records too, but this time for the lack of snow.
If you look at just the core winter months, December, January, February, Anchorage had about 5 inches of snow, and that is a record low amount by more than a factor of two. So you know, normally during that time, almost 45 to 48 inches of snow should fall, and we had five. Basically stopped snowing since middle of November. So it was really one for the record books. And we have actually data going back at the airport only to 1953, but at other stations here in town, Merrill Field, and before that, several stations downtown, going back to 1916. So in 97 years, there's really been nothing like this in terms of the low snowfall. This is really a year that stands out by itself.
What does that tell you about the climate? Is, you know, I mean, the difference from 1 year to the next, does that say much about volatility or what?
Well, I think really what it says is about the local perspective, right? So the previous two winters in Anchorage were two of the snowiest on record. Over large areas, they were unremarkable winters. You know, 50, 60 miles away from Anchorage, it wasn't anything that people would remember. This year, 50, 60, 100 miles away from Anchorage, it's been a great snow year, but they have to listen to us whine about it. And so it's just a question of, were we in the bullseye 1 year? Were we in the bullseye this year, or the outside the bullseye? And there's really not a lot to be read into bigger picture, but again, statewide, it's been a really good snow winter. A lot of snow, particularly between the Alaska Range and the Brooks Range. Almost everywhere, not everywhere, but almost everywhere is above average for snow depth at the moment, snow water. We're kind of in a little snow desert, as it were, here in South Central.
I mean, obviously, you know, a big, huge chunk of the state's population is here and experienced this very low snow winter. What sort of things did you hear from people about that? I mean, in terms of their displeasure?
Well, I haven't heard anyone say, I wish every winter was like this. You know, we like to do stuff outside. You know, it's a long winter, the nights are long, and we need to get out. And it was rainy and icy for weeks. And then without the snow on the ground, it's been really dark. And again, it was just a winter that you know, nobody could love.
So with such little snow on the ground right now, in this part of the state anyway, is there a higher risk of wildfires or an earlier risk of that maybe?
We are under a higher state of alert for early season fires. You know, most of the fire acreage in Alaska in any given year, something like 98% is lightning started. And the lightning season generally kicks in sometime in the last week of May, some years in the first week of June. So any fire that happens before then is a human-started fire. So it's really kind of up to everyone who might be listening to take extra caution to not let campfires burn. Or I even saw in New York State, they had a wildfire that started from people cooking s'mores in their backyard. So even something as innocuous as that could be a problem, and if conditions are really dry.
That was National Weather Service climate researcher Brian Brettschneider, the climatologist in our Ask a Climatologist segments.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to healthcare in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Musher Jesse Holmes raced out of White Mountain a little before 5 p.m. today, poised to win his first Iditarod Trail sled dog race. Holmes has about a three-hour lead over his closest competitor, Matt Hall, and he has just 77 miles to go to Nome. All mushers must take an eight-hour break in White Mountain before the final push to the finish line. During his stop, Holmes told Iditarod Insider that his dogs seemed mentally down going into the prior checkpoint in Elam, but after a rest, they were ready to run.
I just started stopping and petting everybody and singing for them, cheering for them, and snacking them.
This is Holmes' eighth Iditarod. He has previously placed as high as third. The Interior Alaska musher is originally from Alabama and has starred on the reality TV show Life Below Zero. Holmes, Hall, and Paige Drobny have been trading the lead for most of the race. Hall can leave White Mountain as early as about 8 p.m. tonight. While resting in the checkpoint, he told the Insider that he stopped trying to chase Holmes out of Elam and that he feels calm going into the last leg of the race.
It's really, really nice to have a buffer, like both sides. Like, I have zero stress. I'm just running dogs, which is what I know how to do. I ain't catching him. She's not catching me.
Hall has about a five-hour lead over Drobny, who's currently resting in White Mountain in third. The mushers are racing on the longest Iditarod trail ever. That added distance paired with tough trail conditions have pushed back the finish time, too. A winner is expected in Nome early tomorrow morning. The number of Alaska native language speakers has been declining over the years, including speakers of Aleutic. But a new language class that's live-streamed from the Kodiak Archipelago community of Port Lions aims to combat that trend locally. KMXT's Davis Hovey has more.
Jamai, Kuiana Telu G, hello and welcome. Thank you all for coming to another episode of King's Corner.
Every Thursday, students from the school in the native village of Port Lions discuss Aleutic culture and language. That's in preparation for class lessons and conversations in Aleutic that are live-streamed online twice a month. It's the Port Lions students' first time speaking their native language within school through the Aleutic Culture class. That includes practicing everything from weather reports to animals and place names in Aleutic. Jess Egemeyer II, who works for the native village of Port Lions, teaches the class.
You know, I really saw a need for content that was focused on the local community and that would include current events happening in the village and at the school, a local safety bulletin, you know, the weather forecast as you've seen.
The Port Lions School is K through 12th grade and has 26 students total. And the Aleutic Culture class is a multicultural elective under the Kodiak Island Borough School District's curriculum with support from the school's head teacher.
Port Lions is Mashi Shuk.
Majik Shuk.
Majik Shuk. Yuzinki is Ushinkuk.
Very good.
Egemeyer says the live stream, which is called King's Corner after the school's mascot, is a product of elders and the previous generation laying the groundwork for language revitalization in Port Lions and around Kodiak Island. That multi-year-long effort by multiple organizations and individuals has led to Aleutic textbooks, digital audio recordings of native speakers, and language courses for college students or even adults.
It means a great deal that we are able to provide that language learning to the next generation. It's so important to, if we don't teach our children now, this is how languages die, and it's unfortunately not uncommon.
Alaska Native languages in general are at risk of being lost or going extinct, as elders who speak the language are passing on, along with the lasting harm caused by colonization and the boarding school era, as documented by the Aleutic Museum. For Koniag or Kodiak Aleutic, which is the dialect mainly spoken in the Kodiak Archipelago, less than 20 fluent first language speakers are still alive today. Egemeyer himself grew up speaking the language with his grandmother, Sophie Katelnikoff Shepherd, who died in 2021. They both were a part of Kodiak's language revitalization effort more than a decade ago. One of the ways to continue to keep the language alive is through teaching the next generation and new speakers, Egemeyer says, and the native village of Port Lions is hopeful that the classes at the school will help both native and non-native students contribute to the preservation and promotion of Aleutic culture. The live stream also has the potential to reach far beyond the community or even the island to share the language and culture with the rest of the world. Egemeyer says the school has tapped into Starlink for high-speed internet, while GCI's new subsea fiber line still hasn't quite been linked up to the village.
It's really sort of changed things in the villages, certainly in ours, as far as connectivity goes. I mean, we've been dealing with almost dial-up speeds before that.
Egemeyer says the class will go through the rest of this semester, and he hopes to continue it this summer and next school year, too.
We say in Aleutic, Tunk Chukum Gin Chali, I will see you again.
Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, Clarice Larson in Juneau, Simon Lopez in Homer, Davis Hovey in Kodiak, and Ava White in White Mountain. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. We had production help tonight from Wesley Early, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
I can almost see it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying, you'll never reach it. Every step I'm taking, every move I make feels lost with no direction. My faith is shaking, but I gotta keep trying. Gotta keep my head held high. There's always gonna be another mountain. I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle. And sometimes I'm gonna have to lose. Ain't about how fast I get there. Ain't about what's waiting on the other side. It's the climb. The struggles I'm facing, the chances I'm taking, sometimes might knock me down, but no, I'm not breaking. I may not know it, but these are the moments that I'm gonna remember most, yeah. Just gotta keep going. On the bottle that you left next to my bed, the makeup on my pillow reminds me you were there. Try to tell my friends what you do, but it's too hard to describe, 'cause everything about you is better in real life. Get up out of my head, get up out of my mind. So come and fall into my arms and let me hold you tonight. You got my heart in your hands and it just feels right. So come and fall into my arms and let me hold you tonight. Let me hold you. Let me hold you tonight. Yeah, when it's late and I'm lonely, I've had a few drinks. It's your head a lot stronger, baby, if you were here with me. Are you up or are you sleeping? Can you be on your way? 'Cause I ain't stop thinking about last night all day. Get up out of my head,
into my arms. Let me hold you tonight. You got my heart in your hands, and it just feels right. So come and fall into out of my head, get up out of my mind. Come and fall into my arms, and let me hold you tonight. You got my heart in your hands, and it just feels right. So come and fall into my arms, and let me hold you tonight.
just to watch you be seen. I could almost go there just to live in a dream.
Trust in me, I can be there for anything you need.
baby. Don't you run from me, baby. I'll give you every little piece of me. No, I won't leave out a thing, cause I know you've seen a lot of things in your life. Got you feeling like this can't be right. But I won't hurt you, I'm down for you, baby. I know you've seen a lot of things. I know you've seen a lot of things in your life. Got you feeling like this can't be right. But I won't hurt you, I'm down for you, baby. I'm down for you, baby. No, let me show you love can be easy if you just let it be. Let it be. Nothing is promised, but I believe if you give me everything.
Trust.
And I give you everything that I got. And I won't stop till you get it right. All the trust.
Thank you. Younga Tribal Council is a proud sponsor of KSDP and Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting. Thank you for your support.
Lend an ear, I'll tell you a story about a man who didn't know how to be. Join a traveling circuit from PI to BC. I was playing dead every morning. I was taking dives every night. But someone came and swept me off my feet in mid-flight. Now without a love, I really got nothing. Without a love, I'd hang up my shoes. It'd be a world of suffering. This one I was ever to lose. So I'm hanging on with all of my power. I'm hanging on as tight as a noose. Around the midnight hour, she said, remember that I'm. So much I threw it away. She could see that what I needed was never there anyway. Now everything around me is shifting. I'm running like a child through a maze. But I'm never lost completely, 'cause an angel keeps me safe. Without a love, I'm dead in the water. Without a love, my aim is untrue. My blood gets hotter and hotter. Without a leaving this angel, hanging on with all of my power. It's looking like our bodies might fuse. And when her cries got louder, she said, remember that I'm. Makes sense in a moment, and a moment's independent of time. But who decides where truth resides? Your guess is as good as mine. So have another sip of the good stuff, have another round on me. If this moment lasts forever, then the truth just see. But without the love, I don't have an inkling. I've been howling every night at the moon. And if the stars stop twinkling, the end will surely be coming soon. So I'm hanging on with all of my.